My name is Valerie Payne, and this is the podcast Binding Unity. I started this podcast because of a personal experience that helped me to see the need for unity in our society right now. I hope that you will come along with me on my quest to find unity as we seek understanding, connection, healing, and love. Hi, everyone. You are listening to another episode of Finding Unity, and today I have Blaine Shelton on to share his story with us. Blaine, do you want to say hi and kind of tell everyone just a little bit about yourself?
Hi. Yeah, I'm Blaine Shelton. I grew up in Kearns and then moved to Layton and now have my place in Clinton. Mm-hmm. I served a mission in Alabama. I had spinal meningitis at the age of 22 months, and that's how I lost my sight.
Wow. So, Blaine, I mean, I know you know Kate Lovelace. That's how I met you, through her. She's also someone who's blind and shared her experience. I was just curious, you mentioned you were 22 months old when you lost your sight. Can you paint a picture for the audience of what that was like for you growing up, not being able to see? Do you have any memories of sight at all? Or, I mean, I know you were really young when you lost it, but yeah, if you want to just share.
Yeah, no, I don't have really any memories of sight. I had to learn. My mom had to teach me everything all over again. I just remember the smell of the rubbing alcohol and the stickers in my hair from the EEGs, just because of the sound that it makes, and that's about it.
Yeah.
And just being at the doctor's all the time.
Yeah, so what was it like for you growing up not being able to see? Obviously, that's your normal. What was it like for you? Did you feel like you had limitations in your life that you noticed, or what was it like for you?
So I can actually see colors, shapes, shadows,
okay,
a few things like that. And so I mostly can't see detail. Mm-hmm. The brain just isn't registering. It's not sending the messages back and forth, if that makes sense. Because the eyes are fine, but the spinal meningitis damaged the wires that connect to the brain and the eye to send the messages back and forth. So I can tell what some things are, but small details, especially reading, things like that. So I had to start reading at the blind center at the age of 3.
Okay.
At the blind school in Salt Lake. And I was at school from 5. I would get up at 5 a.m. and I'd get home at 5 p.m. at the age of 3.
Wow. Wow. That's a long day. And I know you mentioned things like bike riding and running. Those are things that you've enjoyed doing in the past. Can you explain what that looks like for someone who has, difficulty seeing? How did you navigate that?
There's mainly two methods that are used a lot of the time, because there's a lot of actually completely blind people that ride bikes. One of the methods that Kate uses is echocentry, where she could click her tongue and then it would bounce off of objects and she'd be able to tell how close she was to something.
Mm-hmm.
I use mostly hearing. I don't do echocentry, mm-hmm. but I use mostly hearing and then what I can see as far as the traffic goes.
Yeah.
I mostly ride on the trails where there's not as much traffic, but that's how I would get to and from school every day, was riding my bike to school.
Wow. I'm very curious about the process of riding while having difficulty seeing. So what about if there was a rock in the road or something like that? Would you, how would you kind of know that there's something like that there?
I wouldn't.
Yeah.
So depending on the size of the rock, hopefully the bike would be fine. One of the bikes I ride right now has those giant tires. Are about the size of an 18-inch motorcycle tire.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's kind of go and talk a little bit about that as well, because you've mentioned, things like running and bicycling, that those have been things that have helped you enjoy life. Can you talk a little bit about, you were diagnosed with epilepsy and what that looks like and how that may have, you know, impacted you and your mental health having limitations placed upon you?
Yeah, so I started running in the Braille Olympics at the age of 6 on, and it was a just an invitation meet for all that were blind to go to California. And it was a thing that my mom and I did for Mother's Day. And then I decided in junior high to try out for the track team. And so I know my seventh grade year is kind of favored because of my coach not really wanting someone with a disability. Mm-hmm. But the other thing about it is as a coach now myself, if you don't take any seventh graders, you're not going to have any ninth graders when they become ninth graders. I was running the distance races, the 800 meters and the 1600 meter mile. And I decided to do cross country as a freshman. And that's where I really started to learn about some of my limitations, because the races were more in the parks and things like that. It wasn't on a track that's black and white. I had to, I guess you could say, humble myself and allow myself to have what they call a guide runner to keep me in on course, but also from getting hurt when running like through the parks and stuff in races. Mm-hmm. And I would use those guide runners also in 5Ks, road races and things like that. Mm-hmm. And so that was a hard thing for me to do, to go from being as independent and running all the time on my own to having to have someone run with me. Mm-hmm. And it was fun to try and find somebody that could run at your pace, because they've got to actually be able to outrun you because they have to run on the outside. Mm-hmm. I had several. One from the newspaper is usually the funniest one, just because he thought that because he played soccer 3 times a week that he could, you know, run a 5K with me and it would be fine. I actually lost him within the first mile and had it set up with my parents where there was people on all the curves so that I knew what I was doing. My mom was working at the airport as a skycap, helping those with disabilities get on the plane. And she met a guy that did Paralympics. And so I went out my freshman year out to San Diego to the Olympic Training Center and trained with them. I was running with the U.S. Paralympic team as well as then junior high, high school, and then into college after my mission.
And then I know you said that you were diagnosed with epilepsy and that kind of changed things a little bit.
Yeah, so I got hurt in college and that's what stopped that.
So that's what stopped the running. So it was being injured, not the epilepsy necessarily.
Well, yeah, it took me some time because I'd separated my ribs. And so it took some time for me to recover. And they don't know for sure if that had anything to do with it, because it was like a year or two later that I got the epilepsy. The doctors said that seizures would probably come back eventually from the spinal meningitis. Mm. And I was just eating breakfast one day, and the next thing I know, I'm in the hospital. So I had fallen off the chair because of going into a seizure, and my dad's wife thought I'd drop dead. The doctor told me that my running was done. And then 9 years later, he's saying he wish he hadn't told me to stop because I've been having health problems because of quitting running cold turkey like that. It's not safe or healthy for the body at all. It throws it into a shock.
Yeah.
From running 2 to 3 times a day to nothing.
I wonder, you spoke to, you know, your physical health having an impact. Can you speak to your mental health a little bit? Because I know you were running and that was, you know, a joy for you. And that's also, you know, exercise gives you endorphins, which make you happy. So can you speak a little bit to your mental health and maybe how that was impacted or how that is impacted and kind of how you navigate that?
Yeah. So my parents actually separated when I was in high school. The running world became my life, and if I wasn't racing in high school or Paralympics, I was in a 5K. I was racing almost every week.
Mm-hmm.
I really focused on training for the Olympic trials in 2000. I missed it just by the deadline. I then went on my mission, and I come back, and my parents had remarried and everything. I think part of my problem was is that I would run so much that I was tired, that I could avoid the stuff that was going on at home. And so I didn't have to handle it. And then when I got the epilepsy and I had to stop running, I couldn't hide it anymore.
Hmm.
I had some therapy while I was on my mission, but I had to start doing a lot of therapy because I didn't just lose my sport. I lost my, I guess you could even say lost my family.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what my family was my running, and everybody knew who I was, and all of a sudden I disappear.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, when we talk about this podcast and finding unity, you know, we talk about how we can find unity through seeking understanding, connection, healing, and love. And so what I'm hearing you say is this sense of connection that you had with this community of runners, you lost that connection almost because you weren't seeing them or participating with them as routinely as you were before.
Yeah. And so it caused a lot of depression. I think that's one of the main problems that I had, was losing that, because that was the one thing I held on to the tightest. I tried to substitute it by taking some classes to learn how to fix bikes. And so I fix up kids' bikes and I either sell them or I give them away. I give away more than I sell. They're usually, I'll get a bishop's order or I'll find out a single mom can't afford a bike for a kid. So I'll drop them off a bike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I mean, it sounds like what I'm hearing you say is you lost this sense of community and connection with your running group, but you were able to create a new sense of community and connection as you were serving through fixing bikes and giving them to people in need and making connections that way.
Yeah. And so I would do that. And then also doing landscaping with my brother.
Yeah.
To try and stay busy and kind of take it off my mind.
Yeah. And to have a sense of purpose maybe, right? Like in helping, in helping in your brother's company, but also with the bikes.
Yeah. And then I think I found out about the Special Olympic team here in Davis County by there being a family in the ward that their daughter participated. I'd gotten permission to run again. And so I tried to compete, but my ribs and stuff just hurt, and I was so out of shape that to run those distance races just wasn't going to work. I started helping the coaches more with coaching because of being an athlete for over 20 years. I've ran all the races that they're doing, and so I knew what I was doing, and I was able to help the coaches, and so I'm now one of the coaches as well. I use that as another way, and the being around the athletes have been a lot of good, done me a lot of good, because of being able to watch an athlete come from being in the mental hospital and things like that to now being the athlete that's on the board of directories, and being able to watch her and train her and help her mentally and physically, it's been a great process for me, or great thing for me. And she's become my little sister. I'm on two of the committees, and so I get to, if I see things that are going on as an athlete that need to be changed, I can, when I go into some of these meetings with the staff, I can tell them what I'm seeing and what we need to do to make changes. And I put all my time of coaching into working with these athletes, and I get help with other sports too. So I help with the cycling. I also help with, and I get to participate in stuff. So I'll play bocce, stretching, and all that kind of stuff to improve their sports that they're playing.
So, you know, you mentioned that you were able to reach out and find, connection through the Special Olympics, through service of fixing bikes, these different avenues of unity, essentially. What do you think gave you the drive to reach out and to search out those things? Because sometimes when people experience depression or other mental health concerns, they'll retreat inward. And I'm just curious what gave you the incentive, or how you pulled yourself out to look outward.
Yeah, it was more because I wanted to, I guess, in a way, feel like I was back home, back with my family, back with where I felt the most safe. Yeah. Is out there on the racetrack. I wanted to be back there. And my dad had passed away not too long before I had joined up with Special Olympics. And so it helped me to feel a little closer to my dad too, because he very rarely missed any of my races. The only ones he would miss are ones during the day when he had to work, or when I was racing out of state. Mm-hmm. And he couldn't afford to fly out there to come with me.
That's really beautiful that you're able to kind of feel that connection through that.
Yeah.
As we wrap up here, we've talked a lot about, you know, just ways that you have found connection and healing. And so I just wanted to ask you, in case there's anything else you wanted to add, maybe ways that you found understanding, healing, connection, love, as you've kind of searched for unity. If there's anything else you wanted to add from your experiences.
It's interesting because sometimes it's been a friend comes in that you hadn't met before that comes in and gives you that kind of that attention, but also gives you that courage to move forward and to stay strong and keep moving forward. And so there's those kind of things that would happen. But then just feeling loved and accepted through Special Olympics, and how loving and accepting those athletes are. Some can be really competitive, but most of them are just so happy to compete and to be there. And a lot of them come and ask me for my approval and if they did okay. And they'll have several medals and they'll ask me if that was good. And it's like, yeah, that was really good. And so it's things like that that help, of just watching someone else succeed.
Yeah. You know, I've said this a couple of times in this interview, but it sounds to me like what's helped you to find unity and healing and connection is having that sense of purpose.
Yeah. And the first time I ever worked with a special needs athlete was when I was helping coach over at a junior high, and because I had a little more time I could spend with her, I got to work a lot of one-on-one time with her, and I felt so bad because and this is one of the things that is really interesting, because I knew where she was coming from, because when I was competing in high school and junior high, college, I'm the only one with a major disability. I'm competing against regular sighted, healthy athletes. And so it's a whole nother level of being able to compete with my disabilities and being able to compete with them with the regular people. And so where this girl, she just placed last every time, and I felt so bad, and I was trying to figure out what can I do to get her to not place last. And we just worked and worked, and she finally placed third to last in one of her races. And you would think that I gave that girl $1 million, and she just ran over to me and hugged me, and just seeing how excited she was that she didn't place last, and being able to run in that regular athletic world. And it's a scary thing to go up against these athletes that have an advantage over you, and being able to run and be able to hold your ground and compete just as well with these athletes as you could with the ones that I would run with on the Paralympic team as well.
Yeah, definitely shows a lot of grit and a lot of resilience. So yeah, that's amazing that you were able to help and participate in that experience for her. First of all, thank you so much for being willing to be on the podcast and for sharing everything that you shared, and just to maybe help other people listening understand a different perspective of at least you as a person. In closing, I like to ask everybody this question, and that is, what does unity mean to you? So what would you say unity means to you?
It's being a part of something, a family, a group, just something to that effect where you're not alone. And that's where I found that was through my running, and then also through Special Olympics and making friends and learning those things and overcoming the challenges that I've had to, and seeing that I still have the support behind me as I would do things, and see which ones are your true friends and which ones aren't, because they'll stand by you and support you, and that's where unity comes in, because then you can turn around and help them in some way as well.
I love it. Thank you so much. Thanks so much for being on and for sharing just a little bit about your life story and your experiences. And I hope it's helpful to people who've listened. So thank you for being on.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Remember that it's okay to disagree. Unity comes when we can agree to disagree while still maintaining a love for one another. For more on unity, follow us on Instagram at finding.unity or on Twitter at finding_unity.